Nice. So the last point that we were up to, which we already covered in the Gemara, but we didn't yet get to talk about it in this year, is the question of how does the Kabbalah of the Bali Din, how is that going to work to exempt the judges, right? If just because the litigant said that we're okay with you judging us, so how is that going to make him exempt in the event that, the judges make a mistake, or that the single judge makes a mistake? We talked about the various models for the Reish Galusa, right? Is the Reish Galusa working through Hefker Bez and Hefker? Is he working as a king? Is he giving some sort of junior smicha? Is that the model here? But what is going on if you just have the litigants saying, we accept you as our judge? It's obvious that that has no power of a junior smicha, right? These are just, Reuven and Shimon who are coming to litigate. And it also seems clear that, A, we shouldn't be able to say Hefker Bez and Hefker, because these are just regular people. And we also shouldn't be able to invoke the king model, right? So what are we going to use? How are we going to exempt these people? So there are three basic models that I have in the source I sent you, and those come up in the Ran, the Yad Ramah, and the Baal HaMa'or. The Yad Ramah is probably the most obvious, but let's see the Ran first, because it's just a nice segue off of the Reish Galusa that we were talking about on Friday. So you'll see, it's the second Ran that I have in the quotes, right? It's the one that starts Elavadai. So the Ran says, Elavadai hachi ikar ha-perish, ikabluch alai hu stam, pater min ha-tashlumin. They don't need to give an explicit acceptance, right? If they just accept him as a judge, so then he will be exempt from payment. It's as if he got reshus from the Reish Galusa, if he's accepted by the litigants. Upatr mitashlumin. So how does that make any sense? How could we say that that litigants accepting you as a judge is equivalent to the Reish Galusa accepting you as a judge? So the Ran says, "V'dinhu sherashus shenostin lo bali hadin alatzman omedus lo makam natilas reshus meirish galusa." He's sensitive to the problem. He realizes that he has to explain this. And why should that be the case? Why should it be the case that the bali din are equal to the Reish Galusa? Right, the Reish Galusa has authority, right? He can empower you as a judge for Jews in the entire world. So when it comes to these people, Shehim Shalitim al Atzman Kimo Reish Galusa al Kol Yisrael. Right? They have authority over themselves, just like the Reish Galusa has authority over all of Bnei Yisrael. So let me open up to you guys, because I'm honestly not sure exactly how to define the tour according to the Ran. What do you make of this last of this line?
In terms of what exactly?
You rule over yourself just like the Reish Galusa rules over all of Yisrael. So how does that make the judge pater if he makes a mistake judging your case?
So I wouldn't say that's a din in actual halachic din, but a din in, it's very confusing, not a din, but a din in authority. Meaning the Reish Galusa has authority to, from an institutional level, to make that this person doesn't have to pay if he makes a mistake, which makes sense if you look at him as from a role of kingship or rulership, whatever you call it, Malchus Yisrael. So for instance, just that, someone has the same authority on themselves. So I wouldn't say it's from a halachic, really a halachic theorized standpoint, or a halachic din standpoint, but from the standpoint of Malchus.
But if these people aren't kings, then how could that be?
Really, well, didn't the Ran say Kemah, yeah. The other Ran. Klomer Reish Galusa, who omid b'makom melech.
Right, so the Reish Galusa, he's a junior king. That I understand. Reish Galusa is a junior king. Reuven and Shimon.
Reuven and Shimon are kings over themselves.
What is that?
I'll totally have more power over themselves than a king has over them.
What is that? So that's just what I'm not sure exactly, is what does that mean?
What does it mean, that someone has authority over themselves?
Yeah.
They hold themselves responsible
for
their decisions?
I guess, but in other words,
It's sort of like them making an agreement, like, we want to figure out who owes who money, so we can ask this guy to do it for us, and we agree whatever he says is right.
So it's
from a social standpoint, like, you need things to work.
The problem is that, like, the Yadrama, who's the next source, for example, right? So he gives what seems to be a much more simple, straightforward explanation. Right? He's just going to tell you that they can accept you as a judge, and if they accept you as a judge, then what do you want, right? Either you're treated as a judge for them, because that's how they're treating you, or you could interpret it as they've forgiven you. Right, that's a machlokas between the Ktsos and the Chazon Ish, what exactly the Yad Rama means. But the basic point, according to him, is just they come in, they said, look, you judge us, whatever happens, happens, and then we won't hold you responsible in the event that you make a mistake. So that's fine. Where did the malpractice policy come from? It came from the litigants. That's very simple. Why does the Ran have to say more than that? Right? Why does he have to go off on, oh, just like the Reish Galusa rules over everybody, so too you rule over yourself? It seems like he's saying something more than what you'd call like the straightforward pshat. And I'm not entirely sure. I'm not entirely sure what that is. I have to be honest.
Maybe he wants to connect it to why this comes right after we talked about. Why do we talk about Yipuchatlahu sort of parallel to getting Rishu from the Reish Galusa? So he's just making it. He's making it parallel.
But is there any like legal point that he's driving at?
Well, I'm not sure if he says it's so parallel. I sort of get the implication that he thinks that Reish Galusa could theoretically give Rishus from the standpoint to a head yod. The person implies that the person doesn't have to be a mumcha if it's Reish Galusa. Only if it's a yachid who's accepting him upon himself, does it have to be mukha?
I'm not sure I follow that.
I mean, the Ran gives the implication that if the Bali Dinin are accepting the Dayan upon themselves, then the Dayan has to be mukha. However, the Reish Galusa accepts him upon himself and accepts or
the
gives
judge,
him authority,
right?
And the judge authority, then the judge would not have to be mukha.
Well, the Ran will allow a head yot to get off as well if he gets Kabbalah from the...
He wouldn't.
Oh.
So, by Yach, by Baladinin, it has to be Mukha. By the Ishklusa, not necessarily. So as much as he wanted to make this connection, he's only making the connection to a certain extent.
Maybe. Maybe. I have to look back at the Ran and see what he thinks is the person who's getting Rishus from the Reish Galusa. Does he also have to be a Mumcha? I'm pretty sure that Mumcha here, and this I was actually talking to someone the other day, this is driving me crazy, Thras Sanhedrin, is you never know what a Mumcha is. A Mumcha could mean someone who has Smicha. A Mumcha could mean somebody who's just a very competent judge. I don't know how you tell. In every case, it's driving me nuts. We might see that come up later tonight with the Shach.
I'm so confused with the Shach.
Yeah. All right, we'll get to it. It's a bit of a classic Shach where he walks in and he says everybody is wrong and I'm right, and really everybody agrees with me. But anyway, maybe you could be right. I'm not sure. The only thing that I might be thinking is that the ultimately where does Reish Galusa get his power from?
From according to the Ran,
the Pasuk. He gets his power from the Pasuk, but his authority
political.
To empower judges is political. It comes from his authority over the people, right? The fact that he has authority over the people is what allows him to empower the judges.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe the Ran, and I just sit and figure out how you define that. But the Ran says, well, since the Reish Galusa. Qua Reish Galusa, right, he's not supposed to have authority over the judges. He has authority over the judges because he has authority over the people. Once you say that, then maybe you could say, well, a person has authority over himself, therefore he could also have authority when it comes to a judge vis-a-vis himself. But I'm not...
It's
not
a question of to what extent does he have authority over the people? Because the Ran also qualifies that. He says only by Hora. Well, only by Hora over people in the Eretz Yisrael.
Not sure what you're talking about.
The Ran, the first Ran, at the end.
Kolam Reish Gola Hu Omi Yakom Malach Vehefkir Hefkir Vetakanasa Rishu Samish Pashetas Al Kol Yisrael.
And then he makes it a din lechachom, not even a din in.
But the rest of what I have here is the nasi. Huh?
Where is this?
Are you looking at? You're looking at the first round on the page.
Yeah.
So yeah, what's that first line? Kolomar Reish Gola Hu Omid B'Makom Melech VeHefker O Hefker VeTakanasa Rishusa Mispashetas Al Kol Yisrael. He can, you know, claim whatever assets he would like. He can establish whatever decrees he would like, and his political authority extends over the entire nation.
No, I mean
it's a lot more than Hora.
No, but no. At the end of the round, Yish Kolomar Dehani Mili the Inyan Hora.
No, so here, he's dealing with a contradiction, right? Here we say, our Gemara told us that the Reish Galusa in Bavel has more authority than the Nasi in Eretz Yisrael. Another Gemara says that we, the sages of Bavel, have to submit ourselves to the rulings of the sages of Eretz Yisrael. Backwards. Our Gemara is saying the Reish Galusa in Bavel is superior. Other Gemara says the Chachamim in Eretz Yisrael are superior. So that's where the Ron answers. No, you're dealing with apples and oranges. When it comes to political authority, the Reish Galusa is superior to the Nasi. When it comes to Hora and Psak, the Chachamim of Eretz Yisrael are superior to the Chachamim of Bavel.
Well, it's Eretz Yisrael to Bavel?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh. He's asking, right, about the superiority of Bavel versus Eretz Yisrael, and his answer is that they're apples and oranges, the two contradictory sugyos. Mm. All right. Anyway, so let's leave the Ron. For now, we know that. So the Ron's model, however exactly we're going to understand it, is that the way Kabbalah of the Baalei Din work, right, the way that the acceptance of litigants is going to exempt the judge in the event of a mistake is in some way, shape, or form, we're comparing him to the Reish Galusa. So then we get to the Yad Ramah, and the Yad Ramah, we said, is kind of the more straightforward pshat, although, again, it's unclear what exactly that pshat is. But let's read it inside. Let me just quickly see how far in we can start. We'll take it from the beginning. Why not? Adam, you want to take it? Yeah. Mina Tamra? Just because there's a point to focus on that this is going to be important for the Shach.
And the Baalei Din did not accept the Pamusa, but in the Danaks and Pamusa, the Lil, the Kite, Rishutan, the Beish Kalusa, and even actually get Rishis from the Beish Kalusa, Inai Hudina, their din is then.
Right, not that they're exempt, right? In order to be exempt, they'll need to get Rishus or Kabbalah, but their judgment will still be valid.
Taloshan Yachid Mumcha. And there's no difference between here and Yachim Mumcha. One evolution, Gimel Hadiotot. Bein the Rabba, Bein the Rab, Acha, Bein the Racha, Chad Dina, Eat Luhu, Chad Dina, Eat Luhu, Bershus Ka'adi.
Yes, you know, let's skip. Let's just skip down to the third line. Ul Inyan Chiyuva de Dayane, the end of the line.
So they make a mistake in terms of, I understood that as in terms of like lovedness.
Basically.
It depends on whether or not they were accepted. So
accepted by the litigants, right?
The litigants.
So since without the Rishus, or without the Kabbalah, we just established that their judgment nevertheless would be valid. So Al Karche, what's the Rishus or the Kabbalah coming for?
In order to evacuate themselves from tashlumin.
Right, so the Yad Ramah is making a process of elimination argument, right? If you tell me that three people who get together as a court, their judgment is valid even if they make a mistake, right? Which is what our Gemara said in the very beginning. So then when the people come along and accept them as judges, they must be, what are they accepting them for? What's the purpose of their acceptance? Process of elimination. It can't be they're accepting them to judge the case and that their judgment stands as valid, because their judgment stands as valid independent of the acceptance. So there must be something additional that's being given by the litigants to the judges. And what's that? So the Adrama argues, oh, it must be that it's you know, malpractice insurance. Right? What else could they be giving him? That's where the Shach is going to come in. He's going to try to figure out, you know, respond to that argument of the Yad Ramah. He's going to try to figure out what else the litigants could be giving the judges. But anyway, it's clear from the Yad Ramah, right, in either, again, what either the litigants are accepting them as judges, right, so they're like giving them a shame dion, right, that's how the Chazadish explains it, or what really seems more likely, the way the Katzos understands it, is that there's a machila. Right, we're going to forgive you, and we walk into your courtroom, and you know, even though like we're having a furious debate over the $100, but even if you make a mistake, we will in advance forgive your judgment, your mistake, because otherwise, what does it mean that we're accepting you? That's the opinion of the Ramah.
How is this different from Rashi?
Does it have to be different from Rashi?
No.
What did Rashi say?
Rashi also said,
Lagamre. Yeah, no, you know what? You're totally right. I thought, right. Lagamre, Lelech, Acharacha, Im Ladin, Im Latos. I think you're absolutely right. I think Rashi thinks that what's the operative principle is Machila as well. It's more explicit in the Ramah, but I think you're totally right. Mm-hmm. No question. Awesome. Okay, the last pshat, this is the pshat which is kind of out of left field, but then the Shach is going to get all excited about it. Comes from the Baal HaMa'or later in the Sugya, and also it shows up in the Ramban, in the Ramban's Perish to Bechoros. But I only saw a quote, I didn't find it. I'm pretty sure that there's no riff to Bechoros, but if you go to the back of the Gemara in Bechoros, the Ramban said, oh, the riff missed this Masechta, and there's some stuff in here that's Lameisa, so I'm going to write a riff to Bechoros. So in there, he has the same idea as the Baal HaMa'or. And the idea they have is really, really fascinating. He argues that, look, the judges, you were supposed to, the litigants came to you, right, to judge them. And then you made a mistake. But nobody, you know, I didn't volunteer my services as a judge. The people want me to judge them. So if people want me to judge, I'm a human being, right? Humans are going to have errors. So the judges should be potter based on the principle of onis. Right? That's what he has. You just look at it in the very last line of the Baal HaMa'or over here. Right? Lo tzrichi minkat reshusa velo kibla lehu hava lehu kebez de mumcha shu potter mil shalim to hava lehu to hava leika anus bita uso. Since the Beis Din, you know, is susceptible to human error, it is as if they are anusim, right? They weren't maliciously butchering the judgment. They made a mistake, an innocent mistake, and they should be patur because they're anusim. And fine. So what that means is that when the litigants come in and accept them as judges, that means the judges did nothing wrong. Right, if the judges, let's say, forced their, you know, they rammed their judgment down the throats of the two litigants, right? Two people are having a fight, and then Beis Din jumps in and says, "We're gonna, you know, litigate this," and they mess up. So maybe you can make the argument that that they did something wrong right there. But since these, even though they're only, well, even though it seems to be that they're, let's actually leave that point off. Off right now, but these people did nothing wrong. They had really no choice. They just made a mistake. They should be patur because they're undusim. Okay, so now we've got three basic models for how Kabbalah is going to work, right? Model number one: somehow we're modeling the Kabbalah on the Reish Galusa track, right? They're really the same thing. Some way that's what the Ran thought. You have the Yad Ramah, who let's just say says that the litigants are forgiving the judges. It's a form of machila.
Can I ask a question more?
Yeah, of course.
So why is it relevant that it can't be that there's never a gamir or sevir on the Beit Din? Why is that relevant to them being susceptible to human error or to anus? Really, does that mean because like they try?
Second. I think the point is just that you've got competent.
There's competence.
There's competency in the court, right? We're not dealing with the three dominoes players. Okay. Or dominoes was the game we used. I'm pretty sure. He's working off the Gemara in Zebor, but I'm pretty sure that's the point. Yeah. Okay? Good? Mm-hmm. Okay, so then two nafka mina from this that are one. It's funny because on my notes that I have the shach with one word, even though he goes on for so many pages. Shach nafkamina for hediotos. But then he goes on and on and on, right? So the Ramah that the shach is working off of, the Ramah says that if you have three hediotos, which is, again, I can't tell when the Shulchan Aruch is talking about a mamcha, is that a samach or just a mamcha? I'm not sure. But let's assume, whatever. Hediotos, I'm not sure if these are wonderful Tamidei Chacham who don't have smicha, or if they're regular people who are sitting on a court. But however we define hediotos, the Rama says that three hediotos, if they judge with the Kabbalah of the litigants, they will be pater in the event that they make a mistake. And the Tur has this, the Rush has this. It seems to be the firmly entrenched psak of Ashkenaz. Along comes the Shach, and the Shach thinks that it makes no sense. And the argument he makes is the follows. He thinks that, look, according to the Baal HaMa'or, right? According to the Baal HaMa'or, does it make that again, that the rationale for Kabbalah is ones. So does it really make any sense to say that if you have three hediotos, they were anusim? What do you mean? If you have three hediotos, they're not an official bezdin. They have no mitzvah to judge. They could just go home if they want, right? If you're the mumchen, if you're the official bezdin, you have shoftim v'shotrim, a mitzvah to judge, then, right, they, Moshe Rabbeinu and Parashas Yisro set you up as the court. So then you're an anus, because you must judge the case, and innocently you got something wrong. So what can you do? You got something wrong, but you had to be there. But if your regular hediotos, argues the Shach, who said you had to be there, right? Who set you up to be a judge over the people, right? It's what's the line that Dustin and Aviram have to Moshe, right? Like something something gam histarer, right? Who set you up over us? So if the judges wanted to jump into the case, they cannot call themselves anusim. Very nice, they got a Kabbalah, the litigants accepted that they're going to judge, but just because you were accepted as a judge doesn't make you an anus. Doesn't mean that you had no choice, right? I could have said, I don't want to judge. Like, that was a viable possibility. So according to the Shach, and it makes a lot of sense, the Baal HaMa'or will not extend the tour of Kabbalah to hediotos.
Where does the Shach, which Baal HaMa'or is he talking about? The one that we just read?
Yeah.
But in that Baal HaMa'or, doesn't he say it's impossible for there not to be a Gamir and Savir? The Eif Shardali could be an Ayin Chazi Gamir and Savir.
I'm not sure. I don't know.
That's why we were so confused about it.
I'm not sure. Let me go through it more carefully and I'll get back to you.
Okay.
Let's
I'll give you a real big pen.
Great, thanks.
It's also a board if you want.
Yeah, but I can't take that home. Unless you want to, like, distract the security guard.
We've done it before.
Honestly, yeah. I don't know if the security guard even looks twice. Yeah.
You, like, take out this table to, like,
Wonderful. Okay. So the one thing that the Shach has to take care of is, right, well, what about, according to the Yad Ramah, right, according to the Yad Ramah, again, that Kabbalah is working through the model of Mechila, let's say. So why can't we say that the Ramah and the Rush and the Tur, who all say that Kabbalah works for Hediotos, why can't we say that it's working through Mechila, that's what Kabbalah is all about. After all, that seems to be the more simple interpretation of the Gemara. The Yad Ramah had his very straightforward proof, right? He said, if they're not being mekabel you for indemnification, what else could they be accepting you for? Your judgment stands in and of itself. So the Shach takes that on in section Gimel over here. And he, it's funny, because it actually works very nicely with the whole point in the Baal Hamar, is he says, well, wait a second. If you're not, if you're just Hedyotos, then you can't force people to come to your court, right? That's what we just talked about, was the whole nafkamina in the Baal Hamar, right? Again, Baal Hamar, we said, since his whole Ptur is based on Anus, so it's only going to apply in cases where you have the official court, right? They have to judge, they have to force the people, etc. But if you have the Hedyotos, who are just setting themselves up as a voluntary court, well, Hedyotos don't have the authority to force people to come to Beis Din, right? This, I'm not like an expert in this at all, but I'm pretty sure this is one of the big problems they have in all the Aguna situations, is right, wife comes to Beis Din A, and the husband says, well, very nice, but I want to use Beis Din B. And so that gets you like a disaster, and Beis Din B is not as uncorrupt as we would like them to be. But we'll get to that. That's going to come up in Zeborer, and I have not yet learned Zeborer, so I really don't know much about that at all. But the bottom line is that a court, the Shach points out that since you can't, since Hedyotos cannot force litigants to come to them, so he has a very simple answer to the Yad Ramah. What does the Yad Ramah was like? What is that? Is the acceptance of the litigants getting you? Shach's answer is very simple. It's getting you. It's getting them into your courtroom, right? Without the Kabbalah of litigants, what are they doing in your courtroom? You can't force them to show up. So what they give you by this Kabbalah is the opportunity to judge the case, not that they're giving you any special indemnification. So that's the argument of the Shach. And so the Shach wraps up, and he wants the Paskin. He thinks the Baal Hamar is right, and therefore he wants to not give a patur to the Hedyotos. And it seems like everybody Paskins against him. But that's one basic nafkamina, right? Is Hedyotos in those various models. The second nafkamina comes from the Ktsos. And the Ketzos says, well, you know, what exactly is this Kabbalah that we're talking about, right? We haven't discussed what exactly litigants do. Are litigants like signing a waiver? Are they explicitly telling the judges, we will, you know, not hold you responsible in the event of any judicial malpractice? Or is it possible that you could just get away with like an implicit Kabbalah? So... one second. Let's see if I put this out. Yeah, okay, so let's just read it inside. It's not so long. We could start with the third line in the Ketzos. How do you want to take it? It's Veli Nira Devadai, right after that period.
Veli Nira Devadai Lefi Shitaf Al Hamor, Detama Demumcha, the Kibluhu, Have Mishum De Anushu, Ukmomar Adinar Lish. So it's dependent on the litigants to accept him, because that's what gives him the insurance.
Right, exactly. So I'm not 100% sure how to work this out in the Baal Hamar, honestly. But within the rush, it's pretty clear, right? He's saying, look, since the whole p'tur is riding on the Kabbalah, right? As we said, for the rush, for the Yad Ramah, the Kabbalah is working through a form of mechila. So since fundamentally, should the judge be pater or chayiv, he should 100% be chayiv. He's only pater because of the Kabbalah that was undertaken by the litigants. So argues the Katzos, there should be no question that this Kabbalah must be explicitly given, right? They must declare, we accept your judgment, and you know, therefore you'll be pater for any mistake, right? You can't make an argument for an implicit Kabbalah, because that's literally what the whole system is riding upon. What exactly is he saying in the Baal Hamor? Not 100% sure.
I think he brings onus into Mumcha. Reason why Mumcha's putter is because of the onus.
Right, and then what's the connection to the someone who shows a dinar to Shulchani and is putter?
So I think what he's saying here is that as long as you the judge are not the one making them accept your judgment, right? As long as they are the ones coming to you asking you to judge them, so then if you make a mistake, you're an anus, right? When will you not have the patur of anus? You'll not have the patur of anus if you jumped in and said, "Hey, I want to judge your case." But if they came to you and they wanted you to be their judge, so then, look, along with me being your judge comes some, you know, there's risk potential. And they have to take that into account. So according to the Baal Hamor, the Kabbalah would not need to be done explicitly. According to the Rush, it would. Okay, great. So Ad Kan on Kabbalah. And now we can move on to the next part of the Gemara. Where had we left off? Did we do the story of Rabba Bar Rav Huna and his fight with Beirish Galusa? Do you remember?
I don't know.
Are you recording this?
Yeah, we did.
Okay, so we go set up for Afghan.
Okay.
How the fight was just saying it was rhetorical.
Yes, exactly. Okay, so want to remind us outside what was going on?
Rabba Bar of Huna had a fight with the Reish Galusa, and he said that I don't get my reshut from you.
Oh, we did do this.
But that was just a rhetorical argument. And then we also, there wasn't enough information here. I don't remember what exactly was missing, but...
Okay. Right. So exactly. Rabbi Rav Huna is having a fight with the Reish Galusa. Reish Galusa says, you didn't get any rishus from me. And he tells them, well, I don't get my rishus from you. I get my rishus from my father. My father gets it from Rav. Rav got it from Rabbi Chia. And Rabbi Chia got it from Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. When we do this on Friday, we'll need to have the family. Well, actually, you know what? I'm going to do the family tree right now because it's going to come up. It's going to come for the next part of the Gemara.
Yeah.
Okay. It'll just be easier to visualize. So we have Rabbi Chia. And it's actually more complicated than it comes out in this Gemara. And he's got a bunch of siblings, right? It's unclear, by the way, if all these people that the Gemara talks about are his brothers or if some of them are women.
Chana and Chana is a woman.
Correct, exactly. Chana and Marta seem like.
But it doesn't have to be because Rabba Bar Bar Chana.
Unless it's Rabba Bar Bar his mother.
Yeah, probably not.
So he's got a bunch of half siblings, and one of them has Rav, one of them has Rabba. Bar, unclear by the way, is it Rabba Bar Chana or Rabba Bar Bar Chana? This is probably Rabba Bar Chana, right? Because it's the son of
Chana.
So that's another problem you've got here in the Gemara. Do we need anything else? And then for our part, it seems like Rav Bar Rav, and then it seems like we have all the way up from here in the next generation, Rav Bar Rav Huna, right? That was our person having the fight with the Rish Galusa, right? Rav Bar Rav Huna. So and he says, I got Rishas from my father. So who's his father?
Who's his father?
Abamari. Trick question. So his father is Rav Huna, right? Rav Bar Rav Huna. So his father is a famous Rav Huna.
Yeah.
And Rav Huna is a student of Rav, right? So it seems like, from our Gemara, it seems like we have two different stories that we're going to hear about, right? The story that we just saw was about Rav Bar Rav Huna sitting in Bavel, who says, I got my Rishas from Rav Huna. He got his Rishas from... Rav, he got his rishus from his uncle Rabbi Chia, right? And Rabbi Chia got his permission from Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, right? The Tana. That's a terrible base, but what can you do? And then the Gemara later on is going to come back to this story. Just fun Gemara factoid is Rav's father and Rav's mother. If you guys know this, we're both Rabbi Chia's brother and sister.
Oh,
Rabbi, Rabbi Chia's.
Oh, yeah.
So I remember doing this. I'm pretty sure it was in high school. Either I was in high school or my brother was in high school and I was learning with him. And we were very confused. So Rabbi Chia is Rav's uncle on his father and mother's side.
We know people with families. Or who have uncles who are, whatever, never mind. Not that their parents are siblings, but, yeah.
Yeah, well, his parents weren't siblings either. They just,
just
shared siblings.
Yeah, or like, shared siblings.
Okay, so let's, all right, so we're going to try to finish by, like, 5 to 8. So I'll read the Gemara and just try to go fast. So now the Gemara is going to ask, right? So we had just said that the Rishus that Rav Bar Rav Huna got from Rav Huna in Bavel, not from the Reish Galusa, right? So what is that Rishus? That's the key question we're going to have to ask, right? That Rishus right here, it can't be Smicha because it's in Bavel, and it can't be our Reish Galusa thing that we had at the top of the Amud because Rav Huna is not the Reish Galusa. So the key question Friday is going to be what is the Rishus that he's getting? So the Gemara is kind of asking that right now, and the Gemara asks, well, wait a second, right? If all that that Rav Bar Rav Huna was saying to the Reish Galusa was rhetoric, right? Nonetheless, there was a historical fact. He did, in fact, get Rishus from Rav Huna. So presumably, when Rav Huna gave him Rishus, he wasn't giving it to him for, you know, empty rhetorical purpose. There was some concrete reason why Rav Huna gave him Rishus. What was that? That's the question of the Gemara. So the Gemara asks, this is the first word in the line is Lehu, right? And we're up to Vechime Achar Delo Mahani Rabba Bar Chana. So now you see a problem in the Gemara, right? I thought we were talking about Rabba Bar Rav Huna. All of a sudden now the Gemara says Rabba Bar Rav Chana. Vechime Achar Delo Mahani Rabba Bar Chana Rishus. Rabba Bar Chana Rishus Dinakat Lamali. Why did he get it? So just note, right, we've got a new person here. And this is critical to Tosfos versus the Rivash. So the Gemara answers La'ayaros ha'omdim al hagvulin, for the cities that stand on the border between Eretz Yisrael and Bavel. And even though the Nasi does not have the authority to give Rishus in Babylonia, he does have authority to give Rishus for the cities that are right on the border between Eretz Yisrael and Bavel. Rav Lochanstein quoted this as a proof that the Nasi has authority everywhere except for Bavel, right? That even though we classically say the Nasi does not have authority in Chutz La'aretz, what that really must mean is he doesn't have authority on the turf of the Reish Galusa. Because otherwise, how could you explain this border towns? At the end of the day, if the border towns are on the other side of the border, then, right, they're Chutz La'aretz for Chuma, Maser, Shemitah, so why should it make any difference for these purposes?
Well, also, like, which border towns is this? Border towns of what?
On the border of Israel.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So the point's going to be is that even though they're outside of Israel, right, in the Middle East, like if you're outside of Israel, so you're basically like on the way to Babel.
But you're not in Babel.
But you're close enough, right? I mean, like if you think of Babel as like the Tigris and the Euphrates, uh-huh. right, and I mean, I don't know.
It's still pretty far, but yeah.
I mean, Syria, right? Syria is the classic middle ground, right? That's the halakhic middle ground between, and it literally is. It's right smack between, especially when you think of Eretz Yisrael is not, the northern border is farther north than the Israeli northern border. That's why when they invaded Lebanon, so they were talking about, you know, like Sheikh Gur of Eretz Naphtali and Asher, which is interesting to read 30 years later. But so anyway, so the Gemara asks, right? So my reshusa. So what is this reshus that we're talking about? So ki habanachas Rabba Bar Chana le Bavel. So Rabba Bar Chana and his first cousin Rav. So they both went with their uncle Rabbi Chia to study in Israel with Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, and now they're going back to Bavel, right? So ki habanachas Rabba Bar Chana le Bavel. Amalei Rabbi Chia le Rebbe. So Rabba Bar Chana's uncle Rabbi Chia said to his Rebbe Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, Ben Achi Yora the Bavel. Yora, can he do Yora? How are we going to translate Yora? Says Rashi Isser Veheter. And Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi answered Yora Yadin. Can he judge Yadin? Sure enough, Yatir Bechoros. Can he determine whether a mum on a bechor is a severe enough mum to allow the bechor to now be be shechted, right? Exactly. And Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi said Yatir. Great. Now a little bit later, ki hava nachas Rav leBavel. So now Rabbi Chia's other brilliant nephew is returning to Babylonia. So once again, Amar le Rabbi Chia Rabbi Ben Achosi, you're the Bavel, right? My sister's son is going to Bavel. So this, by the way, seems to imply that Chana is a brother, right? Because he had for Rabbi Bar Chana, he had said Ben Achi, you're the Bavel. Now he's saying Ben Achosi. So, whatever. Okay. I know people think that Chana means both, so I'm not sure how exactly to deal with that, but I don't really care right now. So you're the same thing.
She says Chana is Abu Hatim Rabba.
Yeah, which makes sense. What we've got. I don't know if there's a different Gersa, whatever it is. So now we have Yora, Yadin, Yatir, Bechoros, Al Yatir, right? So all of a sudden, Rabbi Yudanasi says that no can do, there cannot be any allowing of the Bechor. Rav will not be allowed to pass on whether a mum is okay. So now the Gemara asks, Maishna lamar de kakari ben achi, Maishna lamar de kakari ben achosi. Why does he call one my brother's son and one my sister's son? Especially since with Rav we know that it was a 50-50 shot, right? He could have said either one and he would have been right, since Rav was both Rabbi Chia's son and Rabbi Chia's sister's son. So why did he call Rav his sister's son? If you're going to say this is just what the story was, right? So they're all one big happy family. Rav bar achvua dehava bar achte. Right? Rav was both his brother's son and his sister's son. Rav bar Chana bar achva delav bar achte. Right? But Rav bar Chana was Rabbi Chia's brother's son, but he was not Rabbi Chia's sister's son. So again, why did Rabbi Chia specifically call Rav his sister's son? So v'ibayis ema al shem chachma. So maybe it's because of Rav's superior wisdom. Tichsev emor lachachma achosi at. Right. Shlomo says you should have the same like casual familiarity with wisdom as you do with your sister. But if that's true, right, that Rav was so brilliant, which we know. So yatir bechoros al yatir maitaima. Why on earth didn't Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi allow Rav to matir bechoros if he was so brilliant that we refer to him with amor lechachma achosia? So the Gemara says, "Ilei mishem de lo chachim ha kamrin and de chachim tuva." Right, we said that Rav was a genius. El mishem de lo bekiya b'mume. Right, he wasn't an expert in mumen. The Ha'amar Rav Shmona Asar Chadashim Gadalti Eitzel Roa Behema Leda Eza Mum Kavu of Eza Mum Over. And this really famous Rav spends 18 months on a farm to learn the various differences between what is a permanent mum, which will allow you to shech the bechor, and what is only a passing mum, which will not allow you to matir the bechor. People also pick up on the fact that Rav says Shmona Asar Chadashim Gadalti, right? That I grew up. Mm-hmm. So apparently, it wasn't like he took 18 months out of yeshiva. It was when he was already like a young, precocious child. He realized that it would do him some good to spend time on a farm. And that would serve him well later on in his career. So, Ella l'chalik lo kavod l'rabba bar chan. Right, this is a really fascinating idea, as Rashi draws out, right, that since Rav already is the superior chacham to Rabba bar chana, so Rabbi Yehuda Nasi wanted to make sure that Rav did not overshadow Rabba bar chana, and therefore he gave Rabba bar chana smicha in an area which he did not give Rav, right? He specifically did not allow Rav to allow Bechoros so that he would not totally overshadow Rabba bar chana with his wisdom. That's proposal number one. Proposal number two, V'yibay Sema, Mishum Hagufe de Rav Bakia Bemume Tfe. Right? Since Rav was such an overpowering expert in Mumin, Avishari Mumi de Lo Yadi Inshi, right? There's going to be these extremely obscure defects nobody has ever heard of. They're all going to assume, oh, must be, this looks really bad. Must be that I never heard of this mum. Maybe we shouldn't be makil about it. But since Rav knows, oh no, it's a famous case out in the Far East. And I only saw it because I spent my 18 months on the farm. So he's going to give allowances for all these cases that no one else has ever heard of. Right, so people are going to get confused because they're going to see Rav giving kulas for all these cases they never heard about, and it's going to end up with like a runaway train that people will kind of just think, oh, even though I don't recognize this mum, right, must be it's mutter because, you know, the last 10 times I had a mum I didn't recognize and Rav said it was mutter. So Rav actually, because he was too great an expert, it would have been risky to allow him to paskin Bali Mumin. Okay, so now the Gemara is going to ask a question, which is a really problematic one, and if we could, I would love to give a couple of quick answers for it. Gemara asks, Yore Yore, I Gamir Reshusa Lamali Lamishka. What is the point of getting Reshus for Yore Yore? Why does he have to get permission to give Psak in Isser V'Heter? Answers the Gemara, Mishum Maisa Shehaya, because of the following case. De Sanya. Pa Machas Halach Rabbi L'Makom Echad. Right, so Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, he's a Nasi over all of Israel, so he's going on tour, right, making sure everything is okay. V'Rab B'nei Adon Shemagavlin Isosehem B'Tumah. He saw people who were kneading their dough in a state of Tumah, which is a problem because they're in Israel, and they're taking Chal and stuff from this. It's a real disaster. What are you doing? A certain student showed up here. He gave us a psak that may bitsaim ein machshirin, right? That if you knead your dough in water from the swamp, in swamp water, that swamp water does not make something royal kabal tuma, right? Normally, water is one of the seven liquids. If it touches food, now that food is tame eligible. And so they thought that the student had told them that swamp water is not like regular water and it doesn't make your dough prepared to be makabel tuma. Problem is that makes no sense, right? There's no halachic status of swamp water. So what exactly had happened? The who may beitzim darash lehu, right? He actually had told them that egg juice does not make something able to be makabel tuma. V'in hu savur may betzayim ka'amar, right? When he said may beitzim, he said egg juice. They thought he said may betzayim, that he had said swamp water, and then it led to a disastrous mistake. Okay. Let's it goes on a little more. Fine, let's just skip a little bit more. The Gemara gives another example of another mistake that they made, and then the Gemara says you have the line that starts hacha echshure, right? And the Gemara says baosa sha'a gazru. Then you have the by ain mishpat with the hay talmid al yora el mk nota rishus me rabo, right? That we now have decreed that no student should ever give a psak unless the student has gotten permission from the teacher. Right, and seemingly this has nothing per se to do with the halachic knowledge of the student in question, right? What's clear from the Gemara is that there's more to effective psak than the knowledge base, right? There's also the ability to clearly communicate the psak, and even though the student may have acquired the necessary knowledge, it's still incumbent upon the teacher to make sure that that as a posek, the student will be effective. Was there any Rashi in this that I wanted to highlight? Rashi just says, right, Nota Rishus Me Rabo, Kiyav Le Rabo Rishusa, Medak Dayak Beishi He Lashona Pasuach, Velo Yitu Hashomen Estavar, right? That's one of the things that the Rebbe has to make sure, right, is you can't just give him Bechinas on Yaradeya, has to also give Bechinas on homiletics, and right, make sure the education courses are all in order. Okay, so that's really interesting out of and of itself, and gives you a window into the nature of psak, and that it's broader than just knowledge. That's great. So one question before we circle back to the whole issue of modern smicha is, so were you able to see the Rabbi Tarfon Gemara?
Yeah.
Right. So Rabbi Tarfon thinks that an animal is treif, right? And then he finds that he made a mistake, and Rabbi Tarfon gets all upset because he says, "Oh, right, Tarfon, there goes your donkey," right? Because he says, "Presumably, I'm going to have to sell off my animal in order to compensate the person who I gave the wrong psak to." And then and then Rabbi Akiva said to him, "Oh, Rabbi Tarfon, don't worry, you have smicha, so you're in the guild, right? You're an officially licensed and approved judge." So therefore, you have an automatic patur, right? Even though you made a mistake in judgment in psak, that's okay. So all the Rishonim jump in and they ask on the Gemara. Well, the Gemara, hey, welcome back. When the Gemara had asked that line, right? Yore yore I gami reshusa lamali. What's the point of getting reshus for iser v'heter? The answer should have been the exact same reason that one would get reshus for yad and yadin. Right, namely to be exempt in the event that you make a mistake. All right, so I'll just run off the answers to this. Did I give you the first Tosfos on Hamad Beis? It's an astonishing Tosfos. It's really problematic. No. Let's read it if we can, actually.
Oh, you did, actually. Yeah, yeah.
All right. Do you want to read it?
Sure. Igame Lamalai Vashut Lamishkal. Had the Lomishane, the Inyan Vitar, the Perak Asadine Mamunot. Oh, I didn't read this. Mukhash Tarif Rishut, Liptater,
right.
Visor Vahater, Mishum to Iliptar Greza, Lohayat Tarif Lamishkal, Rishuta, Bitarte, Behor Obadin.
So what's the answer? The answer is that once you got Rishus for Yadin Yadin, that would also give you an exemption for Yore Yore. So the question jumps out, and Tosos Harash asks this question. He says, well, how does that make any sense, right? Couldn't you have somebody who's eminently qualified in the area of Yadin Yadin and eminently unqualified in the area of Yore Yore, right? How does getting Rishus to be exempt from payment in the area of Yadin Yadin, why should that grant you an exemption in the area of Yore Yore? Tosfos make this assumption. Oh, if you've got Yadin Yadin exemption, that should also give you a Yore Yore exemption. So it's a really big question. Two possible explanations. I'm not so sure about either one of them. One is that Tosos just have some sort of they just have an assumption about like the holistic qualifications of this judge, right? That just presumably if the person's become a massive expert in Yadin, we could presume that the person's also become proficient in Yore.
And he thinks it goes both ways.
Two ways street. Right, exactly. If you have if you're a master of Choshen Mishpat, then presumably you took some time to read Yoredeya. If you learn Yoredeya, if you mastered Yoredeya, presumably you took some time to learn Choshen Mishpat. That's a possibility. It's not super compelling, and that's why the Tosa Rush is jumping up and down. The other possibility is Rabbi Rosenzweig's suggestion, and we'll save it for next time when we do the modern Smicha Machlokas. But so keep in mind the question. So that's Tosos. Then we've also got Tosa Rush. What does he say? He gives a very simple explanation. Right, we had said that Kabbalah. Is a tour in the case for the judge, right? That if the litigants accept you as a judge, then you can judge them risk-free, right? Thresh himself had said, well, when they show up to your courtroom, presumably they're accepting your authority, they are forgiving you, etc. So the Tosas HaResh says, and yeah, the Adarama says this as well, which is great. They're all Ashitase from what we said at the beginning of this year. They said, well, there's no case, every single case ever of a psak in Eser V'Heter is the Shoel brings the Shaila to the Posek, right? So every case, by definition, of Eser V'Heter has an implicit Kabbalah in it, because when they bring you the case, that's a Kabbalah, just like when they bring their case into your courtroom and accept you as a judge. It's great. I have no idea what that answer does with the Rebbe Tarfon Gemar. I must be missing something. But the Rebbe Tarfon Gemara was a case where Rebbe Tarfon Paskin, the person's animal, was a treifa. Mm-hmm. So unless Rebbe Tarfon enforced his psak and it wasn't brought to him as a shaila, I do not know. I don't know what their answer is. But there must be something. There must be something there. I mean, it's something too. I gotta look up that and Rebbe Tarfon. Okay. The Rabbi Tarfon who said right that he's going to lose his donkey because he wrongly declared an animal treifa and he was only exempted because Rabbi Kiva told him good news, you have smicha, so you're automatically pater. Okay, two more answers. One from Rabbeinu Yonah. Rabbeinu Yonah, this is just like an easy technical answer. He says, well, Yore includes all areas of Eser V'Heter, and most areas of Eser V'Heter have no financial loss, right? For example, most of Hilchos Shabbos, he says, there's no risk of financial loss. So what the Gemara's real intent with the question was that this reshus for Yore was way broader than it needed to be, right? The person needs financial protection in like 3% of Eser V'Heter cases, so it should have been a much more specific permission than the broad Yore in all areas of Eser V'Heter. So the Gemara is picking up on that and saying clearly there must be more to this Rishus than simple financial protection, right? It must be that there is a necessary permission to Paskin, which is right how the Gemara ends up, right? With that student who they had been confused with his with his ruling. That's Rabbeinu Yonah. And then the last answer comes from Rabbeinu David. Rabbeinu David is our favorite Rishon. It also shows up in the Meiri. And Rabbeinu David says in judgment, right, so someone who has real smicha has an automatic p'tur. Right, because there's a presumption of extreme competence and the right to judge. So Rabbeinu David says, well, so too, in Hora'ah, the competent posek has an automatic p'tur. The Nesivos kind of has the same idea, right? That just, in other words, the Torah, whoever the Torah wants to be judging is exempt if they mess up in judgment. Whoever the Torah wants to be paskening is exempt if they make a mistake in psak. Who does the Torah want to be judging? The people who have smicha, right? You need smicha in order to judge, right? That's the whole Elohim stuff we talked about in the beginning of the year. And so who does the Torah want, he argues, to be paskening? The chachamim, right? We never heard of any requirement for smicha to paskin iser v'heter. The Torah wanted the chachamim to paskin, and so if you're a chacham and you paskin, you're just doing your job, just like the judge who has smicha is doing his job, and therefore there is an automatic patur for iser v'heter. And that's why the Gemara needs to come off and say, well, wait a second, right? Why did Rabba Bar Chana and Rav need to get this yore from Rav? If they're chachamim, then they're built-in yore, right? So that's how they explain the question of the Gemara. Is there anything else? I mean, you should just know, like, be familiar with I don't think we're going to do it, but the next chunk of Gemara about Talmud al Yora, right, a student not paskening in the vicinity of his Rebbe, I want to move on, we don't have so much time this semester, so we're not going to deal with that so thoroughly. I think there was one relevant line at the end of the Gemara with Rabbi Yochanan. Just that one line. Rabbi Yochanan gives rishus to Rav Shaman, right? Did you see that? Where he says, you have rishus from us until you get to Eretz Yisrael. So just two things to have in your mind about that. One is Rabbi Yochanan had real smicha, right? Rabbi Yochanan is one of the chacham in Eretz Yisrael. Later on in Daf Yadalad, when the Gemara talks about real smicha only being able to be given in Eretz Yisrael, Rabbi Yochanan says, you know, I have this great student, Rav Shaman, who's living out in Chutz La'aretz. I wish he was here that I could give him real smicha. So I'm pretty sure there are Gersa problems with this Gemara also. But assuming this is Rav Shaman, yeah, there are Gersa problems here, right? There's a note. It might be Rav Shaman Bar Abba. It could be someone else. But assuming it's the same person, assuming our text of the Gemara, so even though Rabbi Yochanan had smicha, and wanted to give smicha to this Rav Shaman and couldn't do it, so nonetheless, he's giving him rishus. So what's he saying? You have my rishus until you come to me. Presumably, what's going to happen when you come to me? I'm going to give you real smicha. So that possibly implies a link between the rishus that he is giving him and the real smicha, right? It's like, for now, I'm giving you the Rabbanan version, right? The whatever I can give you now, I am giving you. When you finally get to me, because I'm desperate for you to come, so I give you real smicha, then I'll give you the real McCoy. So this line in the Gemara might be implying a connection between the fake smicha, let's say, that the Rabbi Yochanan gave Rav Shaman and real smicha. And the last point is that we see from here that modern smicha, let's call it, can have conditions stipulated, right? You could limit it by time and place. You have smicha until you can paskin until you come to me, right? That's what Rabbi Yochanan is telling Rav Shaman. So that might also be an area of crossover between real smicha and modern smicha, and that is what we'll dive into next time. With the Tshuva of the Ribash.
Okay. What should we do for Friday?
So for Friday, just know the arguments of the Ribash in the parts that I told you to look at. So just be on top of the Ribash's arguments. Because the Ribash is making a really, really strong argument that modern smicha is nothing more than permission to paskin.
Did you put that on the original source sheet?
It's
not the one with the quotes.
It's in the email that I sent out to you, I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
Yeah. He's responding to Tosfos, and just saying important to realize is that the Rivash and Yor Sameach is going to make this point, but the Rivash and Tosfos, a part of which read is viable depends on your text of the Gemara. Depends on your Rabba Bar Rav Huna versus Rabba Bar Chana situation. So just realize what when Rabbi Bash is quoting the Gemara, just realize what Gemara he's quoting. Okay. Great. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.